Thanks, everyone, on These Things With It. This is Gary Patterson with Fing and Andrew Wilson with ABW Consulting on This Thing With It. Andrew, got you ready for you to talk today. Any comments before I do a brief overview?
I don't have any comments other to say I'm really looking forward to the next hour and hope everybody will take every advantage to ask as many questions as they have, and interactive is always better, subject to caveats you're about to give, I think.
That's fine. Well, and the other one there, I think the caveat is we're going to set this, and we're going to break a little while later. It's going to be a little short. We're going to leave plenty of time for questions. First on this one is, this is the teleconference on clean tech that the members had asked for. It's entitled, Is Clean Tech Right for Your Business? Considerations on How to Get Started. And again, it will be recorded, and I'll do a download in the next few days for the people who missed. And we are going to do the third and final tentatively in the series on December 4th. We had a request for how the healthcare regulations would impact early stage and growth companies. The background on Andrew Wilson, I'm just going to come back and say we've given it out to everyone. He has approximately 20 years in every aspect. Large firms, small firms, the executive director of the NECC Institute, up through Intel Capital. The topics that we've asked him to cover today what you have asked were, we said, give us an hour overview of the space with questions. We want to start with a brief overview of clean tech, good and bad points to consider, investment decision criteria, the three largest factors that tend to influence decisions, and a checklist of tactical steps to get started implementing your clean tech strategy. So this is basically a primer. We're going to go through this pretty quickly, and we will be off to the races in a second. So what is clean tech? Let's start at the basics.
Terrific. Thanks, Gary, and thanks, everybody, for joining the call. It's a pretty open-ended question, and what is clean tech? And it's one of those things where if you ask 10 different people the definition, you might get 10 slightly different answers, although there should be a pretty large area of common ground in what people respond. So my answer to the question is it's technology that does any of a number of things, all of which can be loosely described as clean or improving the environment in some way, shape, or form. So that would include energy-producing technologies, and some examples of energy-producing technologies that you're familiar with are solar and wind, but that's not necessarily the limit. Energy-reducing technologies, that is, technologies that allow you to do the same function but consuming significantly less energy than their predecessor technology. So an example might be light-emitting diodes, LEDs, instead of incandescent bulbs. They'd be described as clean tech. Technologies that otherwise improve the environmental impact of something. So it may be technologies that improve water quality, remove impurities from waste streams of manufacturing technologies, things of that nature. That qualifies as clean tech also. And then finally, in my definition, technologies that improve improve or make a cleaner form of or more energy efficient transportation. So electronic vehicles might be an example of that. There's certainly an argument to be made that electronic vehicles do nothing more than move waste streams from one location to another. However, more efficient technologies would certainly unequivocally be categorized as clean tech as well.
Okay. Well, the next one we talk about is looking at that is why will the people on this call want to invest money, time, and people into clean tech?
Right. Just to clarify for the audience, we're talking about, as Gary and I described or talked about queuing up this call, we thought about the audience particularly and what you guys might be interested in. So if you're here trying to learn how to start up a clean tech or make investments in companies that invest in clean tech, that's not what this conversation is about. this conversation is about if I am a company in business doing something and I have an interest in making my company greener or making the business that I'm in more clean, how might I go about doing that? So that's the mindset we're coming at with respect to the next 30 minutes or so. If you would like me to speak more to the other side of the equation, I'm happy to do so in the Q&A. Why do people invest in clean tech? Why do companies invest in clean tech? There's kind of four different major categories, I think. The first one is it's financially sensible to do so. That is, it's a good investment to make. Not every clean tech investment is a good investment to make, but certainly one of the investment criteria that some companies do is I'm investing in this because this capital expenditure that I'm making today is going to reduce my cost of operating my company in the future, and therefore there's a positive return on investment. There may be some subset of people who make these investments because greening their company, making their company look more clean or in fact be more clean is central to part of the core mission of their company. And so it's a natural fit for them to want to make investments in things that might reduce their energy consumption, for example. There is a subset of companies that make investment in clean tech because they want to appear to be clean as far as their consumers are concerned. So they are investing in clean tech because their customers care about clean and think that the companies that they engage with ought to be investing that way. And then the fourth category of why some companies invest in clean tech is because they're trying to get ahead of or stay consistent with regulations that would or currently do obligate them to move into a more clean space. So a glaring example of this might be coal power plants that produce a lot of pollution that are obligated to meet certain pollution emission thresholds, therefore have to invest in clean tech in order to make that work.
On these things, well, one of the points that we've had that several people asked was sort of the back to the basics, and again, when we queue this up, is 3 to 5 good and bad points on clean tech. Again, this is the overview primer, so if you could give us the pretty strategic version of this one, and then we'll dive deep in questions later.
Yeah, okay. So the good side of clean tech. This shouldn't come as much of a surprise to anyone here on the call, but I hinted at it a little bit earlier, but certainly one major good as far as company investing in clean tech is concerned is the image that it creates to the brand, both with customers and the desire of a subset of the customers that are out there to be investing or associated with brands that bring part of their brand promise is do no harm or benefit the environment in some way, shape, or form. And similarly, that can extend to employees as well. So attracting the talent that you want, being clean and green will attract a broader set of the qualified talent that can help your company be more successful. So that's a fairly obvious one. Clean tech actually does usually improve operating expense. It can come at a fairly large capital cost, so any investment needs to be determined on the basis of the total cost of ownership. But when you think about things like solar energy and wind power and so on, all of the energy costs associated with those technologies are free. Wind's blowing, sun is shining, etc. And so you're offsetting an otherwise standard period cost with these technologies. Because clean tech is usually about reducing energy or switching to renewable sources and therefore creating a very predictable amount of energy input into your organization, making these investments can also hedge against future energy pricing risk because we don't know 5, 10, 15 years out whether this natural gas boom is going to continue, whether there's going to be another oil shock and so on. But if you're producing your own energy, you know exactly what you're paying from a financing perspective to support the, the investment that was made in that capital, and therefore that the cost of that ongoing energy supply is very predictable in the finance charge. So that's kind of a subset of 3 points on the good side of the ledger. On the bad side, and this is maybe a grain of salt bad. So many investments in clean tech come along with the support of government incentives. And that's a good thing because it can help offset that large capital outflow from an investment perspective. But government incentives are notoriously uncertain. We've seen what's happened with the government shutdown in the last couple of months. Some of you may be participating in companies that have that are the beneficiaries of certain government grants that were all shut down and significantly impacted cash flow. Incentives are no different from that. There is some level of inconsistency, and there's a start and stop nature of these types of tax incentives, and that can significantly impact especially large-scale investments that have long timelines when you get embroiled in that kind of a mess. Another example of this might be in Spain, a number of people made investments in large-scale solar installations with the promise that they would have what's called a feed-in tariff over there set at a very particular rate over a number of years. And the rules changed retroactively, so people who made large capital investments in this equipment with an expectation of a specific set of cash flows retroactively found out that their cash flows weren't going to be quite what they expected. It didn't create a negative return situation, but it certainly pushed the time frame for return on that investment out. All right, so government incentives. Now, one other side of the government incentive pie is the idea around a carbon footprint and carbon tax, and will or will not the government get in figure out what they're going to do there in the long term and what implications might that have on whatever type of clean tech investment that one might choose to make. So that's one. The other is when you're talking about technology that demands a long time to pay back, there is always some inherent risk that the technology itself will not actually yield the results that were sold. That is, a solar panel is supposed to work for about 30 years in normal conditions. The question is, will that solar panel indeed produce the amount of power that it was rated for that 30-year period, or indeed just for the period that it needs to produce in order to have a positive return on that investment? So there is some technology risk associated with making these investments. And then perception that a lot of these activities require a large CapEx up front and then may require some amount of small CapEx over time. That's not necessarily the case. There are a number of different financing mechanisms out there that can remove some of the large CapEx risk from the investment decision on the part of any particular company. There are models out there, for example, where you can essentially lease your roof space out to somebody else who will finance the project and sell you the power from the project in the case of a solar panel. But there are some of those bad perceptions and some things that you do need to certainly think about in the context of the particular investment that you make.
Question. I mean, again, we've looked at those at the high level there. We said, so depending on the category someone's in, that everybody on this call is probably going to have a different perspective. So talking about, going down one level of more detail, what are the largest factors that our people may need to look at when they start applying this to their company and their situation?
Right. Well, that's an excellent question. And of course, every company is different and every region of the world is different. So starting with just location, if you think about if you're sitting in the southwest corner of the United States where the sun shines a great deal and there's less regular wind, that's a really excellent location for solar, right? You've got kind of a perfect storm going on down there. You've got lots of sun. You've got very high electricity rates in that region of the country, and so on. Whereas other locations, you'll have much better wind profiles. For example, in the Hawaiian Islands, where you've got a very steady wind blowing all the time, or pockets of geothermal presence where you can tap into geothermal energy or use the stable landmass for a geothermal heat sink. If you're in a very northern climate, it might make more sense to make investments in technologies that could improve the thermal envelope of the building that you're in as a first low-hanging fruit investment in clean tech. So location depends on the technology that you would pick and the types of investments that you'd be likely to make. The next one is... how can I reduce my operating costs or the consumption of commodities that may be very constrained in my environment? So if I was in New Mexico, where in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area, water is in very, very scarce supply. It's a very difficult place to start water-intensive businesses, agriculture, of course, but manufacturing as well. And so... I might be tempted to look at clean tech technologies that can improve my utilization of those scarce resources in the New Mexico example, rather than treating and returning water to the local aquifer. I might be interested in technologies that can allow me to treat that water back to the type of purity and concentration that I need. In order to recycle that and reuse that system in water in a closed loop system in my manufacturing space, for example, if I can reduce the amount of waste that my manufacturing processes, if I have a waste-centric manufacturing or operating company, if I can figure out ways to reduce that amount of waste stream or manage or reduce the cost of managing that waste stream by looking to clean technologies or leveraging clean technologies or looking to clean in many cases as a buyer of my waste, where otherwise my waste would just go to landfill. So there's many different factors that influence how would I invest, and it's largely on those three things. What's it do to my operating cost? What's it do to the waste footprint that I have? And most importantly, where am I and what technologies make the most sense for me geographically?
Okay. When we talked a little earlier, the next sort of moving from 50,000 feet to about 30,000, we said, we were going to deliver people three tactical steps to get started. So the biggest one is if you can get us down to 30,000 or 20,000, comments on how to determine our unique opportunity that each of the listeners has.
Right. So this is the what's my checklist, right? For
correct.
If I'm interested if I or my CEO is determined that we're going to go green, what ought I be helping him with as a CFO to help drive that investment decision in the most efficient or effective way for the company? So the first one I mentioned in the last segment there is geography. Where am I? Do a survey of what are the geographical constraints that you're under. Am I in a high sun incidence environment? Do I have water scarcity or other key commodity scarcity? Is heating and cooling a principal driver of my business footprint? Do I have any large scale capital expenditure planned that I ought to be then adding clean tech into a consideration matrix? So if I'm going to build a parking lot with a bunch of structures over the parking lot to provide shading, are there alternatives that I can do to provide shading with solar sitting on top of it and enable electric vehicle charging off that solar? Just sort of thinking out loud of the types of things that you might think of. So geography is an important piece, and what technologies are consistent with my geographical reality. So the next one is, if I'm going to make an investment in something, what's the business profile that I want to have of that investment that I make? Do I want to lease? Do I want to own? If I lease, how do I finance that? Are there any really low-hanging fruit opportunities out there for me to say, from a marketing perspective, we made all these big investments, and here's how we were to positively impact the environment as a result of those investments. So, you know, we upgraded our lighting across the entire enterprise from, you know, the aging compact or the aging fluorescent bulbs that are 60 watts per bulb sitting in, you know, four bulbs deep in each one of those lighting fixtures to LEDs. By making that simple investment, we reduced our watt load by this amount and therefore saved this many, you know, barrels of oil or whatever math you want to get to for the impact of the environment that you had there. Is what you're doing here with CleanTech, you know, from a strategic perspective, is it important for it to be visible? That is, do you want your customers to go into your, for example, retail establishment and know that they're walking into a retail establishment that has made some investments in clean tech? If the answer to that question is yes, that will certainly inform the types of technologies that you might want to invest in, and in fact, how to apply those technologies to that space. Right? It's not just having solar panels on the roof that make me green in every case. For a marketing perspective, it may be that I want to relocate some of those solar panels to a place where people will see them. They don't see them so much on a roof. And you might ask, where is my biggest exposure from the legal or political or competitive perspective on both sides of the equation? So if I don't do this, where am I exposed to you know, to getting some negative press? Or if I make a particular investment, how am I going about making that investment, and am I opening myself up to particular criticism by investing in technologies that are largely or in technologies that I may be taking large government incentives for? In my particular case, you know, my customer base may not appreciate that. For production, you know, if I want to be a consumer of clean energy, it may well be that my utility offers me ways to do that without me having to make direct investments. So in the Northwest United States, in case I'm familiar with, you can buy your energy by sort of an a la carte method and say, I am interested in buying only wind energy, and you'll pay slightly more for your wind energy from the local energy utility. However, you don't have to make a direct investment in wind. You just say, I'm a large wind consumer, and that larger energy is being sourced, and your energy supply is being sourced by the utility from wind farms. So that's a way of making that claim without having to do a large capital investment like I spoke of earlier. From energy efficiency, you know, if you're trying to figure out, how do I be more efficient? I've got a big footprint for buildings. I'm mostly office space. You can oftentimes contact your local utility, and they will provide services, sometimes at a cost, sometimes not, where they'll come out to your facility and do an energy audit and help you identify where your biggest opportunities for making these types of investments are to reduce the energy that you consume or green your facility. There are also a number of companies out in the United States called ESCOs, energy service companies, that offer a very similar service, who will come in and audit and then provide all the services associated with making those investments. So, you know, there's specialists out there. Take advantage of the specialist rather than trying to learn and make point investments on your own. And then finally, you know, I spoke about it earlier on waste stream management. Waste streams are so specific and so unique that any particular opportunity to reduce or manage that waste stream in to reduce the environmental footprint of whatever it is you do does require some individual research. Some examples may be, you know, investing in technologies that provide much better filtration to water. Some adulterated water isn't filterable. That is, the particulate contaminants aren't suited to being removed by filtration. But there are emerging technologies that can do things like absorb non-volatile organic compounds that might have been dissolved in water and return that water back to drinking quality or natural quality water. Again, you got to look at that from a total cost of ownership and what the particular constraints are for the geographical realities that you're in. But there are some pretty interesting things there, and if people have specific challenges that they're facing, I'm happy to have a call and discuss where you might look.
The next sort of tactical step, looking at it there, you've touched on it a time or two, this issue of the evaluating how those government incentive program and rules and the cost of participating, you know, if we keep it a little simple and don't think that we're going to be treated like Spain or retroactively they'll change this, if you came back and had just two or three general comments, Andrew, that would help us get started on this evaluation, even though most of us are going to have someone else do it probably, we're going to have to sign off on it. So what are the two or three insider secrets, tidbits that you would give us on that?
Well, that's a very interesting question. There are the United States especially is a fairly complicated environment when it comes to incentives and when it comes to energy. We have 50 different markets for energy that, you know, each one of our states sort of regulates its own energy markets. And that means the rules of the game change from state to state to state. Over the top of that, you've got the federal government and FERC. Now, and then we've got towns and cities and in fact, microcosms within the cities that are focused on specific incentive programs to try to incentivize or develop certain economic zones. There's all sorts of reasons why incentives exist. There are some really excellent resources out there. Typically, the state will manage a web domain around an energy program. Energy efficiency. Look to your State Department of Public Utilities and drill down in there for information about what things are available in your particular state. If you're particularly interested in solar, there's a very good resource here in the United States called I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's DESIRE, D-S-I-R-E. Just do a Google search on that. The website, I think, is a .org, www.desire.org. And that does a pretty good job of summarizing all of the available incentives across the United States by state and at the federal level for investment in the solar side of the equation. So that will get you most of the way through to understand what the incentive programs are, what the rules of the game are with respect to any particular incentives, and importantly, what are the costs of participating in those, because it's not necessarily free. There's almost certainly going to be some level of time invested. There's probably going to be some level of application fee. And then on the back end, when you take government incentives, they ask for reports on the progress and the impact that those investments yielded. And so there's going to be some back-end sort of reporting obligation for taking those funds. So don't just presume that because the funds are there, we want them. Usually the sum of the parts is in the favor of the awardee, but just be aware it doesn't necessarily come for no cost whatsoever.
Okay. And the last sort of three-legged part of this stool, the tactical steps, is most of us at this point are going to say, gee whiz, I want someone to help me. And looking at this one, so, and again, you know, you're doing it, you're a fellow FANG person doing it, that not necessarily saying, you know, you're in the business of doing this particularly here, but if you came back, how do we get a service provider to help us, you know, fees, things to look at? What are one or two, again, secret insider tidbits to help us when we go out and say, we need some help on this thing with it? We're getting close to a go, no go, but we want to have someone's expertise available.
Yeah, I might cast that question slightly differently, which is there's a lot of consultants, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of ESCOs and companies out there that are subject matter experts that can help you make these types of decisions. What I would really encourage the audience here to be thinking about, though, is balance the cost of whatever is being proposed against the total cost of ownership, because this is not an easy to evaluate decision. At one level, it may seem like it, because I'm making an investment and I'm improving operating costs, but that operating cost model really needs to be well thought out. Don't presume that the cost of in your analysis that your cost of electricity is stable. What it is today, it's going to be increasing. The model has been for the last 100 and something years, on average, electricity prices in the United States increase 3% per year. Now we're living in an extraordinary period of time here where natural gas availability has exploded, and that has had some very, very beneficial knock-on effects to the cost of electricity and other energy-centric technologies and the environment. However, I would not be modeling that reality is going to persist. What we do know about economics is supply and demand abhors imbalance, and what we have right now is a glut of this material in the United States and a dearth of it elsewhere. So all of those facilities, there's a handful of facilities that had been being built in the mid to late 2000s to start importing natural gas as it was in decline here in the United States, and those facilities are now being rejiggered to export natural gas, and I would anticipate that the underlying cost of natural gas is going to be increasing at least 2x from where it is today. And that will have some knock-on effects to the cost of electricity. So back to that, just make sure you understand, once engaging the relevant service provider, they're in the business of selling you services, and you need to make sure that you fully understand and agree with the math associated with the cost of the service and the future savings the service is providing from a total cost of ownership perspective.
Okay. And let me wrap this briefly just for a second, because, again, we are going to look at this one. This is Gary Patterson, the high-tech thing, SIG. Our member, Andrew B. Wilson, ABW Consulting, has been our expert on this. You can find him in the Fing directory if you have some basic questions. And this is going to be available. You can come back and play it as you want. So I'm in the next couple seconds, I am going to end this, and then we're going to take questions from our audience. So 1 second.